Hello, you're listening to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Jo Fay, and this week we're going underground to a massive nuclear shelter. Everyone in Switzerland is supposed to have a spot in an underground bunker in case of emergency. Lots of people have their shelter built into the block of flats where they live, but many have a space earmarked in a large public shelter. In the city of Lucerne, a public bunker made for 20,000 people was opened in 1976 in case of nuclear attack. I went to see what it would have been like living underground. Zora Shelbert is a guide at the bunker, and she's showing me around. A long, low corridor opens up in front of us, disappearing off into the distance. It sets the mood for the rest of our visit. Grey concrete is everywhere. It's industrial-looking with strip lighting. The bunker is made fully for function and not for comfort. Zora explained how the bunker came into being.
Back in the 60s, they were also expanding the Swiss motorway system and therefore planning to build two motorway tunnels through the city of Lucerne. And one local politician came up with the idea that they could design those two motorway tunnels in a way that they could also take a secondary bunker function during wartime.
So that's what they did. A seven-storey underground nuclear bunker with two multi-purpose motorway tunnels running through it was opened in Lucerne. We walked down a long sloping corridor into what's called the cavern. This would have been the logistical and technical command unit.
This is the plenary hall, the biggest room in the building, and this is where the staff would have been instructed.
It's a long, thin room with maps and pictures pinned on the walls. It's much like a classroom frozen in time in the 70s, but with no windows.
Almost everything is still in the original state, but you can notice probably that the clocks have stopped in the meantime. Maybe it's also a little bit symbolic because it takes us back to the 1970s, the height of the Cold War.
Deep below ground level, the motorway tunnels cut through the bunker. The two Sonnenberg tunnels are part of the A2 motorway. One day they'd have traffic flowing through them. The next, they could be shut off and kitted out as emergency shelter for tens of thousands of people. How to get clean air to all of these people was one of the most important points about the shelter, which was readied in case of a nuclear bomb. Zora showed me a diagram showing two vents coming out of the top of the bunker.
Well, the thin one was for the diesel engines and the big one is for ventilation. During peacetime, exhaust air goes out, the thick one. It would have been turned into the intake vent in the worst case scenario. Then they would have been able to push the maybe polluted air through this vent so that it could have gone through the air filters before giving it to the people in the tunnel.
The tunnel was supposed to have space for 20,000 people to survive underground for about 2 weeks. Well, that was the plan anyway. It was put to the test in a practice scenario in 1987.
It was the first and only test of the original scenario. It's actually quite amazing in retrospect because they shut both tunnels during 1 week in November 1987. The tunnels are part of the national motorway that forms not only the main north-south axis in Switzerland, but also between northern and southern Europe. It's part of the A2.
They had a straightforward set of goals.
Their aim was to set up the infrastructure in one of the two tunnels and also test all the technical equipment to see whether it was working or if there were any flaws.
But the number of problems proved to be far greater than anyone had imagined, starting with how to move 450 tons of equipment stored in the corridors. There were beds, blankets, frames, towels, toilet cubicles and so on. And it all had to be put together and put into place. Zora and I were standing next to a low, wide wagon.
These wagons were the transportation means to bring all this stuff down the ramps into the tunnels. And as you can imagine, they're not very handy. Also difficult to get through the narrow corridors. Communication was hindered as well because they had no mobile phones yet. Apparently no radio contact either. So when they had to discuss things, they always had to run up and down the tunnel.
It's a far cry from what most people expect from Swiss military organisation.
Last but not least, they say that the head of civil protection, who had the overview over the storage of all this material, wasn't alive anymore, and that he'd only taken mental note of everything. at least they say they weren't able to find anything on paper. So they had no idea how the bits and pieces needed to go together and where they were kept. And in the end, they only managed to assemble a quarter of the intended quantity.
Large doors or gates that had to slide over the tunnel entrance were also problematic. There were rumours that they didn't close properly. But of course, it didn't end there.
And also, when we look at the year 1987, was the year after Chernobyl, the power plant accident in the Ukraine. And people realised if we have something similar in Switzerland, because we have five power plants as well. There's France and Germany with power plants around us. People realised if something like this happens in Switzerland or a country around us, the Sunberg shelter is completely useless because there is no way it can be made operational quickly enough.
In what situation would it be used nowadays?
Nowadays for natural catastrophes mostly. Earthquakes maybe, or mudslides, yes.
And this whole test didn't involve thousands or even tens of thousands of frightened people who would have had to have been brought into the bunker.
They were prepared for a lot. Well, I think that in the end, human mankind would have been the problem in the tunnels.
Once the people were squashed in together, it would have been noisy, cramped, and increasingly smelly, a breeding ground, some might say, for arguments and for tempers to flare.
I don't want to think about a threat situation where you also have people who don't know each other or don't even like each other, because you would not only have families in here, but also neighborhoods, men and women combined, so no privacy. Yeah, it would be very intense.
Zora showed me what the accommodation would have been like and described the sleeping setup.
A unit here consists of 64 beds with bunk beds 4 layers high. Yeah, it's not very much space. The aisle allows maybe 20 people to stand up, so it means that two-thirds of the other 64 people would have to cover the beds just to allow the others to, I don't know, get changed or change their position.
It seems almost impolite to ask, but it's quite a vital question if you're going to be living underground for a few weeks. What would the facilities have been like?
The toilet areas would have to be shared among several units. In fact, 12 sleeping units per toilet area. So 12 times 64 people is 768 people who would have come together just for the toilets. So we have little cabins here. So these cabins are not changing rooms. They are not showers either. There would have been no showers at all. It was not common yet in the 60s to have a daily shower. So each cabin here would have held a toilet, but not a WC, but a dry toilet, a bin with a bag inside. So you can imagine the smell that would have spread rather sooner than later. And in order to cover the smell, they wanted to use sand or sawdust as cover materials. And outside the bunker, they intended to build waste dumps. So they would have used bypass tunnels to bring all the waste outside.
The bunker also included an emergency hospital.
You can really hear the cars now.
Yes. This is the second floor, so 2 levels above. And the second floor used to be a patient ward of the emergency hospital. So every room that we're about to pass would have been filled with patient beds. Because a level below was the treatment ward of the emergency hospital, and another level below was a second patient ward. So two patient wards enclosed the treatment ward like a sandwich. And before downsizing, they used to have an elevator to transport the patient beds between the three floors. The emergency hospital was shut down during downsizing because there are three more emergency hospitals over the city of Lucerne, and in the future they won't have as many people in here anymore. And the only thing that's left of the patient ward on this floor are the showers. These are the only showers of the whole entire facility, so not even the staff would have had showers. These would have been for the patients only.
They had to be prepared for all eventualities if people were going to live underground for weeks.
This room here on the left is the only one which is not painted in yellow and green only, but that has a like salmon-y orange touch. Do you have any idea for Babies? Whom? Yes, exactly. Yeah, because within 2 weeks' stay, there would also have been babies born. Of course, there would also have been people who would have died. So a few floors further down, there was also a morgue.
And there were also prison cells in case things got out of hand. Nowadays, one person and two assistants look after the building. There are public monthly tours in English and different tours in German. The former emergency hospital area was closed after downsizing of the bunker in 2006. Now it's part of the space that would be used to shelter just 2,000 civilians in case of emergency, instead of the traffic tunnels. And if the worst came to worst, what would my guide Zora do in a catastrophe situation? Would she be willing to join thousands of people underground? She's had plenty of time to think about it, after all.
I still have my doubts. But on the other hand, I mean, I have never experienced a real threat situation. And I mean, now it is easy to say, oh, there's no way I would join them because I know the circumstances and the living conditions. But maybe if worst came to worst, maybe I would still end up in here. I don't know. Let's hope I'll never have to make that decision.
While the bunker in Lucerne is still ready in case 2,000 people in Switzerland need emergency shelter, that's more likely in the event of a natural disaster than a nuclear bomb nowadays. Other bunkers, however, have other uses. Often, they're being used to store data. In 2011, a former military bunker around 80 kilometres away from Zurich was converted to be a data centre for the company Deltalis. Frank Hartzheim is the company's CEO.
The perfect data center is a place that provides always energy, cooling, physical security, and the connectivity to the internet.
This particular bunker is located close to one of Europe's major internet backbones, the cables running under the motorway between Milan and Zurich. This means it benefits from fast response times over the internet, or low latency. What is it about Switzerland that attracts people looking to keep data secure?
Switzerland provides stability, it provides a perfect infrastructure for bandwidth and electricity, a very stable legal framework to protect data information. All this together makes Switzerland just perfect.
Switzerland has a reputation for stability, and it has relatively restrictive laws on data secrecy. Swiss authorities are only allowed to access data with a court order, and the party concerned has to be informed. The company's customers tend to have a common focus on security. They could be email hosting services, cloud providers, financial institutions, or pharmaceutical companies.
Recently, we see an important trend by international companies approaching us. We see that 50% of our customers are already coming from other countries than Switzerland. So the trend is there. We expect even an increase of this trend.
Two Cold War bunkers, two different stories. We have plenty more stories about Swiss bunkers and what they're being used for on our website, swissinfo.ch. Thanks to Carlo Pisani for contributing to this programme and to our studio technician Daniel Wieler. This has been the Swiss Info programme. I'm Jo Fay.